Blog Talk Radio.
I want to say is that I love you. And the second thing I want to say is that we can win. We will win our liberation. And in order to win our liberation, we have got to think positively. We have got to believe that we can win. And if we don't believe that we can win, we're whipped before we start. We've got to realize what dangers exist. And we've got to look at those dangers realistically. We can't afford to have a subjective, distorted, irrational fear. We've got to look at the obstacles to our liberation coolly and clearly, and to develop ways to get rid of those for us to struggle, for us to fight for our liberation and for our nation.
On April 12, 1967, at Tougaloo College on the outskirts of Jackson, Mississippi, Stokely Carmichael, who popularized the term black power, lashed out against the war in Vietnam. This speech followed just days after an appearance at Nashville, which prompted riots by students at Fisk and Tennessee A&I universities. 3 days after Tougaloo, Carmichael participated in mass rallies of anti-war supporters in New York and San Francisco. Born in Trinidad on July 29, 1941, Carmichael became an American citizen when his parents came to the U.S. and were naturalized. He was still in college in 1960 when the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC, was formed. It was SNCC which organized the sit-ins in the South. In 1966, as its leader, Carmichael spent a year transforming the organization toward the concerns of black college students. This speech, given to about 700 students, illustrates the clear division between traditional nonviolent civil rights leaders like Martin Luther King and the more militant leaders coming on the scene. Here the viewer can see Carmichael define America's racial problems. Note particularly his concern with semantics and his use of antithesis to contrast the black and white perspective. Also noteworthy, of course, is his ability to excite and motivate his audience. At one point, he leads the audience in a chant, which, though abbreviated on this tape, lasted 10 minutes. In all, the viewer can witness an example of confrontational rhetoric from the 60s, illustrated by the fiery Stokely Carmichael.
I'm trying to figure out which one belongs to the CIA. Nick? It was once one of the only places we could run to for safety when we started to work in Mississippi in 1961 and 62. So that it's sort of like coming home when we come back to Tougaloo. Now I want you to, before I begin, to take a look at all of the pressmen before you. You will notice that not one of them are black. The nerve tomorrow to call me a racist. Are you hearing me?
Allah, the beneficent, the merciful, to whom all praise is due, whom we forever thank for giving us the Honorable Elijah Muhammad as our leader, teacher, and guide. And I specifically, ladies and gentlemen, and brothers and sisters, open up like that because I am a representative of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And were it not for him, you and I wouldn't be here today. In order for you and me to devise some kind of method or strategy to offset some of the events or a repetition of the events that have taken place here in Los Angeles recently, we have to go to the root. We have to go to the cause. Dealing with the condition itself is not enough. We have to get to the cause of it all, or the root of it all. And it is because of our effort toward getting straight to the root that people oftentimes think we are dealing in hate. But first, I would like to congratulate and give praise to the Negro, so-called Negro leaders and so-called Negro organizations. And excuse me if I say so-called, it's hard for me to just outright say Negro when I know what that word Negro really means. The person whom you have come to know as Ronald Stokes, we know him as Brother Ronald, one of the most religious persons who displayed the highest form of morals of any black person anywhere on this earth. And as one of the previous speakers pointed out who knew him, everyone who knew him had to give him credit for being a good man, a clean man, an intelligent man, and an innocent man when he was murdered. The Negro, so-called Negro organizations and leaders should be given great credit for their failure or refusal to let the white man divide them and use them one against the other during this crisis. As Reverend Wilfred Wilson pointed out, I think it was 8 years ago today that the Supreme Court handed down the desegregation decision. And despite the fact that 8 years have gone past, that decision hasn't been implemented yet. I don't have that much faith. I don't have that much confidence, I don't have that much patience, and I don't have that much ignorance if the Supreme Court, which is the highest law-making body in the country, can pass a decision that can't get even 8% compliance with in 8 years because it's for black people, then my patience has run out. When black people who are being oppressed become impatient, they say that's emotional. Please, when black people who are being deprived of their citizenship, not only of their civil rights, but their human rights, become impatient, become fed up, don't want to wait any longer, then they say that's emotional. The Negro, so-called Negro leaders and organizations should be praised. They should be congratulated. They should be complimented, because out of all of them combined, the white man has not yet found one who will play the role of Uncle Tom. But yet he has found no Tom, no puppet, no parrot who is still dumb enough in 1962 to represent the injustices that he's inflicting against our people. We don't care what your religion is. We don't care what organization you belong to. We don't care how far in school you went or didn't go. We don't care what kind of job you have. We have to give you credit for shocking the white man by not letting him divide you and use you one against the other. In the past, the greatest weapon the white man has had has been his ability to divide and conquer. As Jackie Robinson pointed out beautifully on the television last night, 4/5 of the world isn't white. Isn't that what Jackie said? And if 4/5 of the world is dark, how is it possible for 1/5 to rule, oppress, exploit, dominate, and brutalize the 4/5 who are in the majority? How do they do it? Divide and conquer. If I take my hand and slap you, you don't even feel it. It might sting you because these digits are separated. But all I have to do to put you back in your place is bring those digits together. This is what the white man has done to you and me. He has divided us and used us one against the other. But today, thanks to Allah, you can say thanks to God or thanks to Jesus or thanks to Jehovah, whatever you want. But as a follower of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we have been taught to say thanks to Allah. And that's what Jesus said. Jesus called on Allah. He said, Allah, Allah, lama asabatani. I believe what's good for Jesus is good for you. If Allah was good enough for Jesus to call upon, I think he should be good enough for you to call upon. Since the so-called Negro community has shot the white man by resisting all efforts to divide us, I think that you and I should continue to shock him by staying and working together in unity. Despite religious, political, economic, or educational, or social differences, let us remember that we are not brutalized because we're Baptist. We're not brutalized because we're Methodist. We're not brutalized because we're Muslim. We're not brutalized because we're Catholic. We're brutalized because we are black people in America. Here, your mother is being raped and you're not supposed to be emotional. Your women, please, your women can't walk the street without some cracker putting his hands on her, then you're not supposed to be emotional. If you say that you're fed up, if you teach the Negro, they don't even know their own name. Why? Because he took it away from them. Please, please. 20 million black people don't even know their own language. Why? Because he took it away from them. 20 million black people who don't even know the history of their ancestors. Why? Because he took it away from them. And if you try and tell them how thoroughly and completely they've been robbed, he says you're teaching hate. That's something to think about. Today, you are coming out of college. You're coming out of the leading universities. You're trying to go in a good direction, but you don't know which direction to go in. And if somebody tries to take you right to the root of your problem, they say that that man's a hate teacher. If I ask why should the senators in Washington, and then again, if we tell you that Negroes are being hung on the tree or being shot down illegally, unjustly, and those Negroes should do something to protect themselves, you say you're advocating violence. The white man is tricking you. He's trapping you. He doesn't call it violence when he lands troops in South Vietnam. Come, please, please, please. He doesn't call it violence when he lands troops in Berlin. When the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, he didn't say get nonviolent. He said, praise the Lord, but pass the ammunition. But when someone attacks you, when someone comes at you with a club, when someone comes at you with a rope, when someone comes at you with a gun, despite the fact that you've done nothing, he tells you, suffer peacefully. Pray for those who use you despitefully. Be long-suffering. And how long can you suffer after suffering for 400 years? So I just want to clear up that little point right there, because he says that we play on your emotions. And when you turn on your television tonight, or your radio, or read the newspaper, they're going to tell you in that paper that I was playing on your emotions. Imagine you, a second-class citizen. That's not getting emotional, it's getting intelligent. And as far as your mayor is concerned, I see you should say their mayor, a man named Yorty, who has been slandering the Muslims, a professional liar,
who has mastered the art of using half-truths, put it in the paper that they broke into our religious place of worship and got records that they can use to prove that most of us have criminal records. You can't be a Negro in America and not have a criminal record. Martin Luther King has been to jail. Queen, James Farmer has been to jail. Why, you can't name a black man in this country who is sick and tired of the hell that he's catching who hasn't been to jail. Charged him with being seditious. They put Moses in jail. They put Daniel in jail. Why, you haven't got a man of God in the Bible that wasn't put to jail when they started speaking out against exploitation and oppression.
Black power, black power, black nation. You're tuned into In Defense of the People weekly Tuesday night radio broadcast at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern with your host, People's Political Chair, National Chair, Brother Nat Turner, co-host myself, Brother Motherland, National Minister of Defense, and our co-host on the ones and twos, the Silent Assassin, Sister Amina. Calling each and every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time at 845-277-9266. Press 1 to participate. Tonight's topic, black feminism. We're going to open up our lines to our host, People's Political Party National Chairman, Nat Turner, Black Power. Comrade, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Black Power. Right on,
black
Comrade.
Power.
All power to the people. And Uhuru, you know. It's one of the subjects that doesn't really get talked about too much in mainstream circles, or maybe just in general, you know, or on a national scale, a national level. There's even you know, so-called black talk shows hosted by so-called black women, you know. Several of them come to mind. I remember, 20, 25, 30 years ago, these so-called black talk show hosts by black women. And I'm speaking rather on purpose, for a purpose, for a reason, when I say so-called, you know. Some may get offended, but again, it's not some personal rant or whatever, some you know, hating one's, you know, success. You know, the type of things you hear just by people who just, you know, who adapted to cliches or sayings or expressions or whatever, you know, in this country. You know, I mean, the blind leading the blind. But it's a subject that obviously should get more attention. It can be problematic. As a matter of fact, I'm thinking right now, many thoughts, and I hope I can disentangle them and fulfill this mission tonight in terms of what we believe in, you know, politically educating our people, politicizing our people, which is, the key stage in transforming the world we live in from one of decadence, abuse, you know, physical, mental, psychological abuse. Those who have used even religion as a weapon to continue to enslave our minds. And, you know, they would continue to slave our minds would therefore lead to our continual being ruled under the system, you know. But just want to, I guess, give a rundown how we get to this point. What is the evolution of black feminism, you know? Is it necessary? Why is it so important? You know, is it relevant? You know, there could be any black feminism without feminism first, you know, because we wouldn't have to put the word black in front of it, and that is obvious for some of us, and it may not be obvious, you know, to the rest of us, which doesn't say anything at all. You know, just simply say, you know, mind preoccupied by something else. And there's been those of us who have just, you know, try to take the time to learn, you know, in order to overthrow our enemy. And I don't mean that shit in the abstract, man, you know. Nothing like freedom. In this society that we live in, it is what is referred to as a patriarchy, you know, due to the white male social construct of things, you know, the white male social construct, even of how one is supposed to view the world. How one is supposed to see things, you know, such as 9/11, you know, things that transpire, things that take place in whichever way, shape, or form, you know. So in this society, it is obvious that a law of nature says that cause and effect, you know, man causes woman to be pregnant, you know, and the effect is that child in the womb, you know, will be born after a certain prescribed time, also by the law of nature, you know. So if you live in a patriarchal society, which means male, pro-male, then if it's pro-male, then necessarily has to be anti-woman, you know, in terms of, you know, psychology. And like I said, it's a whole host of things. You know, we actually could do a part one, a part two, a part three, so much, you know, that comes to mind. But, you know, under a patriarchal regime, women will naturally, you know, get the short end of the stick. You know, and that's been proven throughout the course of this decadent society. Through a sophisticated one-time savagery dressed up as a civilization. When peeled in the layers back, total contradictions, almost absolute contradictions. You know, take the history of the establishment of the country, America being the bastard child of Western Europe, particularly Great Britain, and of course Great Britain being the bastard child of Rome, and Rome being the bastard child of Greece. You know, you're coming up in school, high school or whatever, 12th grade or whatever, you know, these stages when you start learning world history or whatever. Of course, on into higher education, referred to as college, you know, you're bombarded with this Greek centered education, philosophy in particular. And of course, using philosophy, then one can use persuasion and logic to uphold one's position once he has established it. And the reason why I'm saying that, because you know, the same type of mentality that was brought, you know, from over the ocean, from the Atlantic, you know, that brought the same type of, psychosis, neurotic behavior towards women that they had been exercising for the past 3,000 years, or at least recorded history, almost 3,000 years, extending back to Greece or Greek society. You know, and in Greek society, women were pretty much objectified. You know, they were seen pretty much as property. You know, they were seen as possessions. They had no political say. You know, they had no power. That's why you had this thing in American society where this imagery, you know, of the woman in the kitchen. You know, the woman in the kitchen. Ice Cube, one of his albums when he was solo, he has a line in one of his songs. I think the name of the song is When Will They Shoot? And he has a line where he speaks about, well, then at the time, what, you know, who was his manager at the time, and she may still be. But had a line said, a black woman is my manager and not in the kitchen, so could just please stop bitching. And that was his way of trying to acknowledge to women, even feminists per se, that, you know, a woman was his manager. And this is a subconscious thing, sort of anything that black men tend to have due to our, you know, historical legacy or our lineage, you know, our nature from which we were shaped, you know, being, you know, the original people on this planet and the type of societies that we developed, you know, in our upbringing, in our coming into society, what have you. You know, but the treatment of women in the European context has been problematic from the beginning. You know, it's been staticky from the beginning. So therefore, there will be a natural response to that, you know. In the American context, you know, many of us, most of us, some of us, if not all of us, we've been through these Eurocentric schooling system, mind-shaped, socialized beings. I remember Susan B. Anthony, and who was given a coin, you know, at one point, the Susan B. Anthony coin. And but anyway, Susan B. Anthony has been held as, you know, the most famous, or the, you know, the epitome of women's suffrage, the women's suffrage movement. Even as far back as when black people descendants of African people who were brought here by the violence of force and made into slaves to build the economic infrastructure of this capitalist system. And so Sue B. Anthony was this activist, was leading the women's suffrage movement and also championed abolition, you know, on the part of the slaves. But there was someone else who is lesser known to us. Someone who, from the understanding of her writings, you know, the terminology that we use today to label people, you know, militant, you know, radical, you know, those terms that are juxtaposed to the state. When one begins to think for himself or herself and can see a wolf in sheep's clothing, and therefore is opposed to that wolf because the wolf is harming the sheep. And of course, the people have been the sheep, which is referred to as the sheep, the unsuspecting, the naive, the gullible, the foolish, the brainwashed. You know, these are newer expressions or labels, social engineering. You know, so her name was Matilda Jocelyn Cage. And, you know, like Susan B. Anthony, you know, she's considered one of the instrumental figures in the women's suffrage movement, you know, for women's rights. A natural response to white male patriarchy. She had written a book, and it says it all. The title of a book, it can pretty much sum up this preliminary understanding to get the beat, you know, from A to B. She wrote a book entitled "It Woman, Church, and State," you know, and it couldn't get any more clearer than that. Woman, church, and state. If you took each one of those, you place them in the proper context, and she would know what Chairman Fred would say about heightening the contradictions, to heighten the fervor against the system. And so being a woman under a patriarchal regime, naturally lead to some type of attitude, feeling some kind of way, like we say today, rebelliousness, you know, radicalism. And this is what, you know, she was labeled as, even militancy. And she spoke about the church and the state. And she was very critical, almost a total indictment of the so-called white man, you know, in his patriarchal ways, you know, his sick, twisted, male chauvinistic ways, with his ego driving the vehicle of madness, which he drove himself around in within the society, you know. And what the state was in reference to women, and on into, you know, slavery, you know, the calling of the abolition. And it's very, it's interesting, you know, that we today, you know, as revolutionaries, you know, those who consider ourselves revolutionaries, you know, we use certain terminologies, you know, we don't say the government, we say the state, you know, like George Jackson had clearly demonstrated when he was charged and prosecuted. And, you know, the judge falsely, but for specific reasons, announced it as the people versus George Jackson. And George Jackson said, no, it was the state versus George Jackson. You know, these little shenanigans and ploys, you know, that's being used unbeknownst to the populace. Like when they say understanding, you know, you stand under this without you even recognizing. But her convictions, you know, of the state, you know, you would have swore today that someone like Asada Shakur would have written this book, in a sense. And that is what I can put on it, you know, give it, you know, some type of view or angle. you know, first and foremost, the church professing to be right next to Jesus. You know, God, you know, the Lord, you know, Jesus Christ and the vicar of Christ, or the vicar of Christ, however this word is pronounced, V-I-C-A-R, and which is supposed to be invested in the so-called Pope. And so even hypocrisy against the church, but the church professes to believe his ideals, you know, from the Bible. And even in there, you know, you can see the you know, the sexism, you know, blatant sexism is incredible. Like I said, it's a rare things, man. You know what I'm saying? Eve is made to be the blame for the downfall of man, you know, beguiled by a serpent from a fruit, from a tree, without us even recognizing or realizing the whole play on the story. You know, the male patriarchal play on the story. And there's been a number of books that have been written, you know, of course, you know, by white female scholars or intellectuals who are feminists. One is The Chalice and the Blade by Ryan Eisler, like saying Diane, but you put an R in the front of it. And in this book, she points it out, you know, I mean, these subtle stories, you know, that go right over women's heads in general, you know, and even, you know, over men's heads too in general, lest there be a small group of individuals who, you know, who know the so-called esoteric meaning or inner meaning of the story, you know, the plot behind the story, you know, the whole shit to keep women in this position of guilt, you know. And it's an amazing fact that it's a very detrimental ploys. It has such an effect on women within the society. You know, the play on the story, you know, right quick is to connect all the things about the women and how these things affect the males within society. You know, so this is why you have Eve, who is blamed for the downfall of man, who had seduced Adam to bite from a forbidden fruit that the Lord had told them to stay away from. You know, these trees is cool, and this tree you stay away from, you know, tree of, you know, good and evil knowledge, tree of knowledge, you know. And there's a serpent that beguiled Eve. I love using that word. You know, tricked Eve, in other words, you know, to partake of this forbidden fruit. The woman, the tree, the fruit, and the serpent all have a thing in common in nature. You can actually figure out which time of the season that the story took place, because the fruit is obviously grown on the tree. So we know it wasn't winter time. You know, so that had been summer, spring, or fall. You know what I'm saying? And so the fall of man in the season of fall, and, you know, like when you do the time, you know, we're going to push back the time. You know, fall season, shit go back to 6 months, start getting dark at 6 months, but springtime come right, you know, 6 months later, like a direct line, like a cross, north, south, east, west. You know, so springtime roll on, you know, the hour speeds up. Well, I mean, it was, mean, the hours is pushed forward, you know, the clock pushed forward. So the fall of man. And so the tree is, has to go through the same metamorphosis that the serpent has to go through, you know, a reconstitution of itself. And, of course, the woman periodically goes through a reconstitution of her reproductive system in a sense, you know, to be the better, the mature, the reproduce. You know what I'm saying? So this is the hidden message behind the story. And so even in African societies, there's this thing about when the woman, you know, is about to give birth, and the sacredness of the umbilical cord, you know, which is preserved, you know, her blood flow. You know what I'm saying? And so this is this factor was seen with the European male sees it as a threat in his psyche. You see what I'm saying? He can produce nothing no greater than himself. You know, so these are different types of psychological factors here. The ego, the libido, all these different types of things that go into play, you know, in the patriarchal mindset. You know. And so, you know, go back to Greece, you see, you know, the treatment of women. And so this is why historically there's been these stories, you know, time, these theological stories, these legends, these tales. And the one thing that that cements it is a story of the Amazon women. This is the thing that cements it. Just to give you understand where we're going, you know, to paint this picture, you know, the story of the Amazon women, you know, they've made movies, you know, over the years, and men end up on this island. You know, in one case maybe shipwrecked or something, a voyager or what have you. You know, then they discover, they think this island is not populated, what have you. And then next thing you know, they they pounced upon by women, and then these women have the, you know, the weapons. You know, they have the sheet, and they wear it, you know, like cross their front, their breasts. You know, like you see some women would have the handbags, you know, pouches of hat. And so one of the breasts was removed so it can go across, you know. And so this is the moral to the story. This is why the women treated the men the way that they treated them, because they remembered a long time ago when they were in society with the men, that they were getting treated by the men the way that they were treating them, you know, seeing as pretty much as property, no political power, you know, even to the point where like you know, these public displays of debating, you know, like, you know, in Greek city states, you know, the women were not allowed in these open spaces, you know what I'm saying? And so this is why the Amazon women were treating the men the way they were treating them. You know, pretty much, you know, the reverse slavery, you know, the, you know, reverse oppression and repression, and the treatment that they was, the abuse that they was receiving. Okay. But the kickback to it, of course, you know, the white man, the way he thinks, he could never be outdone, you know, in these stories and these tales. So he has to get some kind of closure for this treatment. Which is a legacy, you know, even on, which is now on the big screen, it's a legacy of it, you know. And so in the end, these Amazon women come, you know, face to face with the one and only Hercules. And you know, Hercules, the travels, the voyages of Hercules, you know, the 12 stations of Hercules, no more than the symbolic movement of the sun through each one of the zodiac signs, in other words, you know. But anyway, so Hercules encounters this trickery that he uses, you know, on the Amazon women. They couldn't conquer him. And so this is symbolic of white male prowess, the white male power, you know, the white male macho, you know, libido, ego thing. You see what I'm saying? And we have this today. You see, like, even some white politicians, you know, over the years feel that they can make these statements about women. If you take Donald Trump, for instance, you know, his views to women or how he sees the woman, you know, the white male patriarchal values, you know, use them as an example. And so, and even sort of a extension, you know, of the Amazon story in modern times. This is why Marvel Comics or whoever created the character Wonder Woman. And so, you know, they remade it in you know, over the past couple years, You know what I'm saying? So this is the birth of Wonder. This is why they had to have a Wonder Woman, you know, to announce the arrival of women, you know, in the corporate world and, you know, in business and politics and finance, you know, things of that nature. And so this, you know, the women's liberation, the women's lib movement, women's lib, you know, which takes us on into the, you know, like the 50s and the 60s, what have you, and development from the women's suffrage movement with Susan B. Anthony and Jocelyn Cage. Now, they were contemporaries. And so, as usual, in the normal case, what would take place is choosing the lesser of two evils or choosing, you know, the one that you have to deal with, you know, if not to pick one, who you deal with, fuck with. And so this is why Susan B. Anthony was chosen. Susan B. Anthony was chosen more because Jocelyn Cage was you know, she was verging on militancy. And she, I'm telling you, if you read this book, Women Churches Up, I'm talking about scathing attack. I mean, just straight outright attack on the white male patriarchal rule and the hypocritical white man, you know, professing to be civilized, but his treatment of women, the church, and of course, in pro-physical slavery time, the treatment of, you know, quote unquote, other human beings, you know, Negroes to be seen as chattel, like, you know, of course, some of the word cattle, like animals. You know, so this is why Susan B. Anthony was chosen. This is almost to say the same thing if you take Du Bois and Garvey, choose Garvey, they would choose, they would choose Du Bois, they wouldn't choose Garvey. You know, the white ruling class families, you know. And on into the 60s, you know, you had Malcolm and Martin, you know, we'll choose Martin Luther King. In particular because of his nonviolent stance, this Gandhiism. So when you had those two, and they would choose Susan B. Anthony. And so, you know, this women's suffrage movement, you know, goes on into the you know, the 50s, the 20th century, whatever. And due to that, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, it ain't really been, you know, like too long since women couldn't vote, you know? And so what the 19th Amendment, you know, would cement, you know, the women's right to vote, you know, in 1919, you know what I'm saying? And so this is, you know, a progress, you know, but we still had a long way to go, you know what I'm saying? The exploitation of other women, non-white women, and particularly black women, you know. At one point you had Shirley Chisholm, you know, who was spun to us. Those of us who was in school in the 70s, you know, in the 80s, it was in elementary school or what have you. You know, and, you know, her interim politics and her run, I believe, for president. And so the white feminist women got behind Shirley Chisholm, you see. And that was no more than, you know, this thing that OG had once explained to me one time about being aware of those or care for those who try to get the steam off your shit. You know what I'm saying? And so, you have the, you know, the Black Power movement, Black Liberation movement, and then the women in the Black Panther Party begin to address, you know, the sexism and what have you, you know, addressing these issues. And I've heard, you know, several Panther OGs, you know, in discussion go over, you know, this dilemma, you know, within the, you know, would lead us to Black feminism, you know, as a knee-jerk reaction to white feminism, you know. The one thing is, the question is, okay, well, other women, well, non-white women, you know, at the time, being told that it's just women, period, you know, and how men treat women, you know, in this patriarchal regime that we live in, you know. So the embracing of feminism, you know, I remember years ago, probably back like in the 80s and the 90s, and I can remember, you know, when they talk about equal pay, you know, and I couldn't, right when you look at it, you know, you know, it wouldn't make any sense, you know, that, you know, women, and they was talking about the corporate world, white-collar world, white-collar jobs, and how women, you know, work 40 hour weeks or 80-hour pay period time and receive less than men, you know, working the same amount of hours. I'm saying, so that was one. That was like the big thing back then. You know, that was the big thing. You know, in the meantime, Black women were still getting the shaft. You know, it was still, you know, come out of Reconstruction, and you know, it was still getting, you know, the same treatment, just in a reworked form. You know. And that was reconstruction is all about, you know. And like I said, when he talked about, you know, getting behind Shirley Chisholm, these token gestures, you know, her staying in politics, but you know, white women tried to exploit that, and having pretty much had a muzzle on their faces, but they were about themselves. They were about, you know, their treatment from their fellow white males who were former slave masters. You know, on one end they professing, you know, women's suffrage. On the other end, you know, they were the heirs of physical slavery. You know, so what I'm saying is, Black women being aware of the fact that these white women were not in the business of dismantling the system. They were in the business of just wanting to have equal pay. You know, they didn't see anything wrong with the system. And Black women, not only want equal pay, but Black women and capitalism has never went hand in glove together. Now, as either, you know, they were wearing gloves in the goddamn summertime and they didn't fucking need them, and when it was freezing cold and it was cold to cities like Chicago, New York, you know, Denver, they didn't have any gloves, you know. And so their problem was much more bigger than just that. So I've learned to say myself, over time and understanding, how this shit works, how it goes. Black women have the most problems than anybody, or black and brown women in general on a larger scale, And these white feminists could not give that the main or equal spotlight of attention. And so this is why, black women who began to develop their own independent thought on white male patriarchal rule and place it in the proper context and draw the conclusion that they had to deal with racism, classism, and sexism. And so, Angela Davis, who was for a short while a member of the Los Angeles chapter of the Black Panther Party, over the years had begun to articulate this. And so she has a book, Race, Class, or Sexism, or something like that. That pretty much every feminist has on their bookshelf. One need not to be a black feminist or female to read the book. Brothers, could read the book and get some of that thought, from a black woman's eyes, through a black woman's lens, seeing the world through a lens that's independent of the white male patriarchy construct or his vision, of events or the conditions of the situation, society, what happened. In the 90s, 2000s, you have other black women who are entering the arena. One is named Bell Hooks, and Bell Hooks, the book that she's known for probably more than any of other books, is a book called Killing Rage. And in this book, she addresses these issues, you kind of get the sense of almost like a gray area sometimes, in the sense, of course, her white academic colleagues, females or what have you. There's a book she wrote called Killing Rage, and I believe, if I can remember, it's forward or introduction or what have you, written by Cornel West, who's probably number one in the black intellectual world, black collegiate world, black academic world, but the one that I can give more credit to the book called Black Feminist Thought. I thought that was a very fascinating book, because she went into these areas, that you wouldn't. Like just normally think or just in general, like an average person would think about it, what have you. Her name is Patricia Collins. And when you ingest the book, you sort of sense a type of militancy in it, I can say, provocative, it's powerful, type. Of course, words and word usage and terms, words of strong effect, you know, adjectival description of something or somebody or what have you, you know. Like, for instance, you know, when you label the Black Panther Party, you know, a group of black violent extremists, and it plays on the public's mind, you know. But in that book, she goes so far and out so much, way out there, to the point where she even when she talks about, you know, she addresses, you know, of course, the white feminists and their subconscious prejudice, you know, the hypocrisy. You know, you can see one thing about your treatment as a white woman and turn right back around and pop champagne with the same man who you having grievances with, and yet that same man you see yourself right beside in the capitalist system, who's been treating black women inhumanely since day one, that they were brought over here in this country no longer in possession of their own bodies, you know, can be raped at a whim at any given moment. And so to live in constant worry and fear, and, you know, the motherfuckers around you talking all this shit about anxiety and fear, you know, what have you. You know, shit, black women been going through that shit, you know, unimaginable ways, you know, every day, worrying whether or not she is going to be sexually assaulted. And these beautiful images, you know, these beautiful depictions, portrayals of Washington and Jefferson, they were fucking rapists. You know, I would tend at times like to ask people that I knew or have, you know, these discussions with people, you know, dealing with slavery and the Constitution, founding fathers and all that bullshit. And, you know, we bring up the subject of Thomas Jefferson and the annual pilgrimage to the Jefferson estate. What is that shit? I can't think of the name of it right now. But anyway, you know, and how they tried to keep under the rug his black descendants today. And all of a sudden, they were able to finally embrace them after decades, Sally Hemings' descendants. You know, but I used to tell me, you're fucking right. You know, he was a fucking rapist. You know. He was doing it enough. Exactly. Do you know any white people last name Jefferson? You know, because I knew a lot of white people, you know, black people know a lot of black people last name Jefferson. You know what I'm saying? But the treatment of black women, you know, from that point on, and white women, feminists, can benefit from the numbers. And, of course, you know, that attitude, you know, from black women, you know, when you quote unquote, you know, you piss them off, you know, you make them angry, you know, thing, you know, that black women possess, that you know, some instances will be exploited or reversed around as the angry black woman who can't keep a man. You know, these so-called black men who have so-called made it, have been allowed access to material luxury and comfort at the sacrifice of black women. And so this white male patriarchal mindset, twisted, neurotic, psychotic behavior has been are ingrained and internalized by black men because of the colonialized mind, because of the internalization of whiteness, white maleness. And all these, again, you know, all these things, this is why people like Sigmund Freud and some people like to pronounce, some people, well, you know, in America they pronounce every letter, you know, but names in this part of the world is called Jung. You know, some people like, but it's actually, I think, something like Carl Jung. It's a German, you know, psychoanalyst or you know, deal with the psychology, you know, this psychiatric thing. And this is why Sigmund Freud and him have been so instrumental in this society, due to the white male sickness, you know, this dysfunction, psychosocial sexual dysfunctionalism. Let me say that again, psychosocial sexual dysfunctionalism. Take all of them and put them together, and you got the white man. You know, and so if he had come from Western Europe with that state of mind, then what you think that meant for black women doing physical slave? It's even to the point where you look at serial killers, serial rapists. You know, you see the same twisted male patriarchal dysfunctionalism. And you, of course, you know, you get all these experts, these so-called serial killer experts, and they put them on CNN, you know, all the most famous ones, you know, who made the news, you know, like the one that would lead these clues and or what have, you know, the fucking with the police, you know. I think Spike Lee made a movie, I think The Son of Sam, I believe, but of course, you know, set in New York. Even that, you know, this type of sick, twisted mind, you know. And so, if it's that, and by the way, you know, it's talking about you trace the shit all the way back to Greece, you know. And I only say that, you know, because of you know, so-called civilization. You know, so-called Greek civilization. But if you look at his history, what was actually civil about it? You know, again, you know, the European man has his own, he's carved out his own definition of civilization. You know, one minute he wants to say civil society, and, you know, you get in high school and they teach you civics in I think, 11th or 12th grade. You know, you learn civics, you know. One who wants to go to school and study law, into politics, you know, learns and studies civic, as opposed to uncivilized societies, you know the primitive, the pagan, and of course that has to be non-whites. You know, but if you take a cursory glance at it, what do you see? And so what we so. You know, we venture on the realm of this the psyche of the black man, the African man, the European model of social construct, as opposed to the African model of social construct. You know, in African societies, women were able to own property. They were able to inherit. You know, you go all the way back with even with these white Egyptologists, these white specialists, you know, examiners of ancient Egypt, you know, how they even write books on several of the more famous queens. And, of course, you know, the most famous would be Nefertiti, you know, Hatshepsut. You know, at least that's how the name is being pronounced Kermit. You know, there's a book these white European Egyptologists, maybe feminist Egyptologists, write these books on ancient black women who lived, you know, 4,500 years ago, you know, and call her first female pharaoh. Her statues of her show the royal beard, you know, that was attached to her face. You know, the royal beard, you know, that a man grows. And the records, scriptures that were left behind, which, you know, talks about her exploits as a queen. You know, the architectural wonders that were raised during her reign. It is a black woman. And so the dichotomy between the ancient black woman in Africa and modern ancient Greece. You know what I'm saying? They could inherit. They could take part in politics. You know, they could, you know, officiate what we now know as religious ceremonies, would have, you know, female priestesses. And, of course, in European modern white male patriarchy, chances is that at the rate these Europeans are going, there will never be a female pope nor a female priest. You know, you have nuns, and even that title, that name itself, there's a meaning behind it. You know, so what I'm saying is, hadn't it been for the mass kidnapping violence of our African ancestors, when we would have no need for black feminism in traditional indigenous African societies. This is parts of Africa where what the white man like to refer to as legislation, you know, has to go through a process or some bill or some act or some law to, you know, to get, you know, passage. Well, in certain African societies, it is the women who get the final say, you know, to pass something into with the white man with the equivalent of a law. And of course, in ancient Kemet, law was symbolized by a woman with a feather. And her name was something like Maya. And so there would be no need for a black feminist coup. You know, now Africa is not perfect. No society or civilization is perfect. You know, but, and this is the thing that white feminists would do to lure black women into joining their ranks. Go as far as attacking their African heritage and culture. It's the same way as the white feminists do to attack Islamic culture, the women in the Islamic world, as a part of the imperialist construct to confiscate the so-called Middle East. You know, to extend it beyond the borders of America, to extend the feminist movement beyond the borders of America. These are the type of strategic ploys. And so why the white women are, you know, supposedly in this, you know, women's lib movement on one end, on the other end, they're helping the same dog, chauvinistic dog, take over Iran, you know, help them take over Iraq, you know, by pitting the women against the men. You know, in other words, a transference of what's referred to as Western values onto an Islamic culture. You see? And so even in some instances, you know, they take some so-called Middle Eastern women and allow them in this multicultural exchange into America and school them and then send them back to the Middle East with a Western mind. As a matter of fact, a little young sister who was attending Tulane University, and I met this little sister. She was like 18, 19 years old, and she wear the headpiece, like Muslim women do, and was rapping with her, chatting with her, and come to find her parents were from the Sudan. Where is the Sudan? The Congo, somewhere in Central Africa. Well, anyway, in a matter of probably a year and a half, this young sister, was no longer wearing, her headpiece. She was no longer wearing. She was, she wanted to experience, the Western culture, the European American culture, And I thought about that, and I draw the conclusion that she's been victimized, and I was only wondering what's been going through the mind of her parents. Her parents are Muslim, and of course Islam was an invasion of Islam in Africa, and so Sudan, parts of Africa, a lot of black people. Had been same thing like they've been with the Christians, internalized Islam, But this is the type of shenanigans that take place, on the part of the white feminists and black women who see these contradictions, like Patricia Collins, bring them out. And from the point of Greece, the treatment of women from that period on, even to, I'm talking about to modern day in Greece today, in modern Greece, and I'm talking about just now being able to vote in terms of a historical timeline, 1952. If I'm not mistaken, passage of women's right to vote in Greece. So it is these advances, this progressivism on the part of European women. And so with black feminism, like I said, you have these three things: class, race, and sexism. And due to the internalization of white male patriarchal mindset collectively in black men, then black women have had to deal with black men on their own, in the sense, due to the relationship that we've had for the past 500 years. It has been necessary, especially in the arena of violence against black women, and in particular, in more larger arena against black and brown women. And so there's an organization that deals with violence against black and brown women, they've done, a lot of good work, to address these internal issues. So this is what makes the black woman's plight doubly hard, And one of the things that black women in a society like this, which would be wise, is to learn how to, shoot a weapon, when you're out in public, in some of these states where you have your open carry states or whatever. And it's not not ladylike, especially in the Wild Wild West, in this cesspool of violence. And so you see it, it's permeated in society, some of us may see there's a thin line, you know, between black feminism and black liberation. There could be no black liberation without black women. So in order to be able to talk about black liberation, we take black liberation serious, wholeheartedly, just as well as some, you know, cats out here take serious, they, you know, niggas take their car serious, you know, rims, you know, and I use the word nigga because we're talking about a state of mind here, you know, this nigga thing, you know, and that's not to say, quote unquote, black men, you know, don't, you know, but if we talk about black liberation, then we could get nowhere if we don't address black women's concerns and issues, which would come under the banner of black feminism. You know, there may be some who, I know it's kind of, let's say black women's issues for ulterior motives, you know, that may exist, you know. There's this tendency, and I've been around, I've seen it, you know, some brothers that I know, who love, you know, our people, you know, have trouble with, you know, black women and this, the feminist thing and stuff, you know. I think it's rather, it could be considered, you know, sort of blind, of course. And you know, you never know what someone been through. But, you know, the one thing that, you know, we can include into this is this thing, you know, where some women may say that, well, I don't need no man, and I can pay my own bills, you know, so to speak. But there's more to it than meets the eye. I remember, and you know, a lot of people may remember, you know, Lil' Kim, you know the rap artist, you know, female MC, you know, and how Lil' Kim hit the scene, you know, with the, you know the real, you know, provocative. She had mentioned this. This porn star in one of her songs. I can't remember her name, so I'm tipping my tongue. But anyway, the point is, Lil' Kim entered the rap world, and you know, all the moral people, you know, all the self-righteous, you know, individuals, you know, in particular, you know, like, you know, you can see like the women, you know, this thing about women are sophisticated women, you know, white collar or professional women, you know, about, you know, how she appeared on her album cover, you know, Scandal the Clash, you know, with the lingerie. But it was a whole demonstration of hypocrisy, in a sense. It was a very sophisticated rebellion on Lil' Kim's part, and a lot of people missed that. A lot of people missed it, you know. And I'm gonna tell you straight up, you know, like real shit, you know, like in a battle, a revolutionary struggle, you know, against the state, you know. Some of us would choose Lil' Kim. Some of us would choose Lil' Kim. We wouldn't choose the professional woman, because in our minds, a professional woman, she gonna go run and tell. You know, but Lil' Kim, you know, it's like some, like I said, some of these songs, you know, Ride or Die, you know, Beyonce and Jay-Z, you know, similar shit. Foxy Brown, Remy Ma, who I think did some time, and I don't know if it was over there, but I think Lil' Kim, you know, one or two of them did some time, you know, because they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't rap. You know what I'm saying? And as strange as that may sound, you know, it's almost saying like I would choose John Brown, you know, who willing to get out there, you know, in the hood, in the neighborhood, and you know, politicize the young cats, his life, or what have you, you know, rolling, you know, we roll together. I would choose John Brown, you know, who wear a polo shirt over you know, somebody who done gave the white man his name back and wear dashikis every day, but ain't doing shit. You know what I'm saying? And so, but you know, I wanted to, you know, mention Lil' Kim. You know, yeah, you know, we can take the, you know, the moral roads, you know, okay. Yeah, you know, no man a daughter wanna no man or whatever wanna have a daughter. Of course, you know, like they say, you know, the women teach the little girls. I've heard it myself, you know. I heard a sister, you know, she had a daughter, and her daughter was sitting a particular way, and it was very interesting, but it was beautiful. Well, the sister told her, you know, she was telling her daughter, she said, look, you know, this is the X, Y, Z, you're showing all your goods, you know. In some instances where you had some of these mothers, these teaching their daughters, you know, you view them, man, you know, this, that, and other, you know, leave something in the imagination, you know, when you're leaving out the house, you know, the way you're dressing. Yeah, you know, we can, you know, yeah, of course. But in this society here, under a male patriarchal society, black women would be way much more under attack, you know, than white women, you know, and clear, you know, again, is the state of mind, you know, the internalization of the European psychosis, you know what I'm saying? And the internalization of it, you know, we've been turned inside out, and so therefore, black women, it's almost like saying, "Well, damn, who is our allies? You know, who is our enemies? You know, one minute do we use our ass up? You know, they want to get the steam up our shit. You know, we be on the brochure cover, the front cover, you know, or the commercial, you know, women rock, you know, so the sisters." It may be a bit problematic and due to the individuals who yelling this shit, you know, but, you know, black girls rock, you know, and I don't think that's a coincidence. You know, yeah, you would see it, I believe it was Taraji P. Henson, you know, at the award shows, whatever that was, you know. Shit. That thing come to mind right quick. Robert Williams was teaching black women how to, you know, handle a weapon during those times in the 50s and the 60s because the men were away trying to make a living for the family. Black feminism is legit due to the conditions. And black liberation and black feminism can work hand in glove, give or take a few things, you know, but collectively, but we could not survive without the other, you know. And I think black feminism need to keep the pressure on, become revolutionary. You know, to deal with all of those isms, all of that shit, all of it, you know. Because as the reproducers, of black boys, you know. And of course, black feminism has to urge black men and encourage black men to fight, and not in the abstract, to reclaim his position in the world, his throne, from here to Africa, especially, you know, on the mother continent, you know, Queen Nzinga, you know, who the brave warrioress, you know, when the British were being themselves, you know, their natural selves by their imperialistic ways, the colonization of Africa, the confiscation of whole territories. The women went to the men and said, look here, the candy shop is closed until you get these white men off our land. You know, and encourage them to fight, that we're not giving you no more princesses unless you get this white man off our land so we can live like we used to live, you know, without being told where we can and where we can't go. You know, you even see instances of that, again, I mentioned earlier, you know, a little touch like on the subtleness, like in the Bible stories, you know. Something else that comes to mind, you know, that would be taken as, and some white women have taken this story where the women had said they'd been praying to this God, you know, this one God named Yahweh, and shit, they've been having a hard time with it. And that they would make cakes. They went back to doing the shit that they were used to doing, because the shit they were used to doing, everything had been working out just fine for them. You know? Until the Hebrew came along and said, this is the one and only true God, and your God is a pagan God, and my God is that more powerful than your God. And the women was like, okay, well, we've been catching hell since we've been doing your shit. But we're going to go back to ours. And they were charged with, you know, almost like sedition. And some white women are aware of those stories. And they'll take them and apply them, you know, to get women in general aboard. Now, when they start talking this shit about men, and unfortunately, you know, some female artists have fell, you know, for these roots. You see in these movies and whatnot, what have you. It could be a sitcom, a comedy movie, what have you. But, you know, all men alike, you know that's just like a man. You know, the man this, man that. But we say, hold up, you know, the buck stops here with that man shit. First of all, which man you talking about? Which man you talking about? Be more specific, which man you talking about? Because I'm speaking English, Jose speaking English, Abdul speaking English, and John Ass is speaking English. Oh, and little Thomas Chung, he's speaking English too. And what's left of the so-called Native American, he speak English too. And those who come to this country, they speak English too. So what problem we having here, since we all speaking English? You know, so we must be talking about the English man you talking about, like the culture you come from, the construct that you derive from. And this is why black people have to turn to themselves, inward to themselves, in order to win the humanity back. And so these white women get to yelling that shit about all men alike, and that's just like a man. You know, yeah, because you came from that construct. And you're trying to project that shit on the black women and get black women to think this particular way about black men too. You know, and of course, and I've said it, you know, yeah, you know, the socialization of the black male mind. know, but sometimes we have to stop that shit. We have to put that shit in check and who you talking about. You know, the only motherfuckers that can speak for us is black women, straight up. You know, so, you know, come from a black feminist perspective means more than just, I don't need a man or whatever. It's more than that shit. That's a tactic used when they create this construct of white male, white woman, black woman, black male, and every fucking body else after that. Now, you can stick the Asian in there somewhere, you know, because the Asian always appear to be the one that won the valedictorian or the shit that all the graduations every year, you know, or what have you. You know what I'm saying? But that's another thing. But what I'm saying is this is a social construct, white male, white female, black female, black man. And so the constant repetitions of it produces this type of mind, you know, the black woman. You know, I don't need a man. In the meantime, these white women will say, okay, that's cool. Well, you don't need them. Well, I'm going to take the ones that's successful, and we're going to get with them, is what you see. You know, so you have athletes, entertainers, and actors, right? You see how it works? This is the group that are necessarily trying to hear that feminism shit, because they're looking at meal tickets. You know, they're looking at a meal ticket. In the meantime, black women are in this struggle. All these stories about any good men, hardly any good black men left. Where'd that come from? How'd that come about? You know what I'm saying? How'd that come about? But it's a whole lot of complications there. You know, a whole lot of manifestations there. You know, it's like, again, you know, trying to untangle, you know, all these wires and stuff. You know, to get each, take each one like the engine of a car, you know, and study each one or place each one in proper perspective in relation to the other, so they all go together, you know, to make up an engine, you know, to a car that runs properly. You know what I'm saying? But again, we have to. In the Black Liberation Movement, include the daily problems and struggles of black women, you know, and if this feminism is going to work with just the feminist movement, period, in this country. And of course, you know, by extension, overseas. And again, you know, you take like Latin America, and there's always, you know, this white mind, you know, like this white person that wants to plant seeds in non-white places. For what purpose? Is it to become the first female kicker in the NFL, you know, the first female quarterback in the NFL, you know, these history-making things, you know, and black women ought to reject that shit and say, you know, or at least espouse black liberation. You know, y'all can have that shit about being the first running back, you know, the first shit. I'm a woman. You know, I ain't trying to get hit by no other motherfucker, especially a male who charging at me full speed. Want to be the first commanding pilot in the Air Force. You know what I'm saying? Just those things. And as of late, you know, in the area of sports broadcasting, you want to be, you know, this the progress, you know, this perception of women's progress, you know, this proliferation of female sports reporters on the sidelines, you know, in the NFL or college or what have you. There's the first female NBA player announcer, you know, or and even, you know, college football. You know, is this what it's supposed to be about? These material advances, this material progress, you know. And of course, you know, ain't but so many seats at the table. You know, so we know that black women not gonna get their just due only on the surface, you know. And so black feminism should be revolutionary, you know, focus on the revolutionary transformation of society, you know. And let these white feminists make a choice. You know, either we're going to be enemies or we're going to be allies. And it ain't always, and this is another thing, this is a proof, this is older brother. he's the first brother I actually heard say or tell me that we say the enemy is my friend. And he was like, bullshit. He said, that ain't always necessarily so. You know, so you took black feminists, white feminists, and the black feminist problems of racism, class, and sex, and oppression, you know, and even the rare case or what could be as a rare case in terms of, you know, black men who have been, you know, physically brutalized by the pigs or executed by the pigs, you know, black women being mishandled violently by some white pig, you know. And so railing against the system of capitalism, and this is how black feminists can expose these white feminists. It's the same thing is like similar like the you know, the Occupy Wall Street movement, you know, where you had pretty much like a sort of a anarchist sort of kind of thing. And when you say anarchist, you know, people get, you know, they get alarmed. But what I'm saying is like a selfless led movement, you know, where the people had come and they would expressing themselves and the grievances that they had with the white ruling class, or so-called 1% who was tax cheats. And so you have black people out there, or you may have black feminists out there in that crowd. Okay, so the question is, where black feminists can ask this question, well, all right, are you only out here because they're tax cheats, your fellow whites who are richer than you? Is it more than that, or is it just that? So ask the question, is it just that? So if they start paying their taxes, then where that leave us as black women? Because these are the ones who own the corporations and the companies, control the means of production, and which therefore controls my life, has an influence on how I live, whether or not I live in the outhouse or the in-house, you know. Whether I live in a nice neighborhood or I live in the so-called urban areas, which are under constant attack by land grab and shit like that, you know. And so these are the type of things that black feminism should focus on, if not already. I couldn't say one way or the other. It may be in play already, you know. But this is the type of critical thinking that we should have, and so to embrace discussion, you know, topic of black feminism, because there's obvious value in it. There's no perfect movement. You know, you may have a few little things which may even lead to, let's say, skirting or verging on a contradiction or two, whatever. You know, but the bigger picture is what? No matter what, our liberation. And if the black woman ain't free, then the black man ain't free. And none of us are free. Contrary to what they show you on television, you know, the latest tactic, strategy, and social engineering by introducing you to the first black female vice president, the first woman of color vice president, or the first Indian you know, vice president. Now, she has all these titles. You know, she has all these titles. You know, and then when these women get talking that shit about, you know, women rock, whatever, I say, okay, well, again, you know, what's in it for black women as feminists? You know, if it ain't liberation, then it's bullshit. You know, so on that note, we, you know, hope that we've done a good job again tonight, and you know, in this topic and discussion. I wish we could have had, you know, some sisters weigh in, you know, calling, but it, you know, it's all good. You know, we're gonna, you know, we're gonna keep doing what we have to do. And what we refer to as a political educating our people. You know what I'm saying? And I think this was a excellent topic, and we should, you know, revisit it, you know, in the future. You know, give an update or you know, continue it. You know, or bring it back around, you know. And so stay tuned.
In this jungle, oh, warrior music, oh. Me wake up from a dream, couldn't go back to sleep. Me sit up and a prayer situation now comes. And me always dead for them, but me not see them in a my tribulation. Oh, it's so funny that the people them would tell yourself to trust them. You never ever get them when you call them. I just you and the problem. Problem. In this jungle, every man feed themselves to prepare for fight. Jungle, they give thanks to the one for true to life. Jungle, the victory's there on the battlefield. Real warriors keep it real. Me get a flat down the road, through me car overload. Me have the spear and my phone battery empty. Maybe through me ear raga raga, me sure never press. People drive past now help me. And the ones who pretend to care, them just all about the money, yeah. Here comes the cops who want to kid me. Ain't nothing but this, no funny. In this jungle, every man feed themselves to prepare for fight. They give thanks to the one for true to life. Jungle, the victory's there on the battlefield. Real warriors keep it real. In this jungle, things I never ever want to see. Many true characters concealed. Flattering lips with smiling faces. Pass them all the while in different places. In this jungle, everyone seems to have a need in agenda. Hey. So why you hunting for mine? Now go on like some blind. In this jungle, every man feed themselves to prepare for fight. Jungle, they give thanks to the one for true to life. Jungle, the victory's there on the battlefield. Real it real. In this jungle, 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 jungle. In this jungle, 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 jungle. Hey. In this jungle, 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 jungle. In this jungle. Me wake up from a dream, couldn't go back to sleep. Me sit up and I pray a situation now comes. And me always dead for them, but me not see them in a my tribulation. Oh, it's so funny that the people them would tell yourself to trust them. You never ever get them when you call them. I just you and the problem, the problem. In this jungle,
jungle,
every man feed themselves so prepared to fight. Jungle,
jungle.
Hey, give thanks to the one for true to life. Jungle,
jungle,
the victory's there.